I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope. Drive is a new movie opening this Friday, starring Ryan Gosling from director Nick Reffin. It is taut. It's a stylish thriller with Gosling portraying the strong, quiet man that keeps you guessing who he really might be and what will happen next. Drive takes many twists and, well, turns and makes for one exciting ride. Here to talk about this new film is director Nicholas Reffin, who just won the Best Actor Award, Best Director Award at the Cannes Film Festival for this movie. And one of the film's stars is with us, Albert Brooks. Good to see you both.
Hello. Good to see you.
I enjoyed this film, and I don't want to give too much away. So how much do you want to tell us of the story, Nick?
Well, I guess it's always just to say how exciting it is and that it's about a man who falls in love with a girl and her husband comes home and then he has to protect her against the bad guys and then our protagonist has to kill everybody.
I don't want to get too graphic, but let's
That was more than I would have said.
Let's just say I drank a lot of water before I went to see the film, and it was very uncomfortable because things were happening so quickly and things changed so quickly.
Didn't want to go to the bathroom?
I didn't want to leave.
Why would you drink water before you go to the
bathroom? I'm an idiot. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Nick, was it your idea to cast Albert Brooks as a bad guy?
Well, yes. The Jim Salas book that it's based on, the bad guys or the mobsters in the film are more in the conventional sense like the mob. And I had this idea that the Bernie Rose character, which Albert ended up playing, was going to be a movie producer who used to be a gangster. And in Hollywood, they always present you with these lists of actors that were just a flavor of the month of something else. And I wasn't interested because I knew that I wanted Albert Brooks to play it, but I'd never met Albert Brooks. You know, I don't live in America. I live in Europe, and
And I don't go to Europe.
And he doesn't go to Europe.
And when I do, I don't meet people.
Doesn't meet people. So I set up a meeting between us. I think we had a phone conversation first, and I talked to Albert a lot of my ideas and heard about his ideas and what I would like to do and how to advance this character. I mean, I always work with the actors to build the characters. When you're good actors, you work with them. And Albert came to my house in the morning, and as I always say, he was a powerhouse of emotions. He was like a volcano, and I sensed a lot of strange behavior in him that led to this idea that he kills people with knives. I thought that could be interesting. He's very meticulous about and vanity about how he kills people. But as I say, Albert, you were just... I was just so into all the emotions that he was playing around
with.
Well,
as an actor, I know what my range is, and it's hard. What Nicholas said is true in that in Hollywood, 12 people do all the parts. It's like a baseball team. And if you're going to cast anybody who's a villain, you got the list of the six people and John Malkovich.
Well, you haven't been on that list.
I have not been on the list. I really wanted, in the first Mission Impossible, I wanted that Philip Seymour Hoffman role. I thought I could have done a really good job with it. But, you know, but people aren't going to buy that. So...
Was there a part of that? I mean, the fact that we see you as so cuddly that even in this film that people might not buy you is...
No, but they do.
No, but that was never the issue for me. But maybe that's because I don't live in Hollywood.
That's right. That was my point.
It was just...
The guys in Europe are buying it then.
No, but it's the truth is that look, I, as a director, I'm not going to write that part for myself just to show that I can do it. I don't make these kinds of movies. I wouldn't make them well. But Nicholas, you need the director to say... Great. It's completely believable. Let's do it. And then it becomes believable. No one has had any issue of what my character is supposed to do. But it needed a talented man from Denmark to say yes. The Hollywood people, they can't turn that far to the right to take a look.
Well, and it was very easy because basically after about an hour's conversation, also I realized that this guy Albert was going to kill somebody someday. So let's do it in a movie.
Before I left, I had this moment. I was walking out of his house, and I thought, do I do this or not? And I pinned him up against the wall. just to show like physical strength. And I thought, you know, this could either work or not, but what the hell, I'll never see him again if not. And I pinned him against the wall, and Nicholas, who's very pale to begin with, sort of turned
more blue.
It's clear, I call it.
Did you convince him? Was that convincing that you should cast him, or did you think, I don't want to be anywhere near this guy?
No, on the contrary, I said, now we're talking. And he got the part right away, and he wanted the part then. So it was a...
It was
good. By the way, and deal making in Hollywood.
By the way, the actor also needs to, you know, I mean, it's a two-way street because you're going to work with somebody for 3 months. You want to know that you can communicate with them and that you're on the same page. It's a very unpleasant experience if you can't. It makes the working process a nightmare. So it's like you want to see if you can fall in love for the making of the movie.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. The new movie is called Drive. It opens Friday. It's directed by Nick Reffin and features Ryan Gosling and Albert Brooks, who's with us in studio today. You have directed so many films, Albert. Do you tend to try to direct yourself when you're in someone else's film?
Absolutely not. I don't. I mean, anything I can offer in a rehearsal period, but I don't. I shut that part down, and I'm grateful to do it because, you know, one of the aspects of directing that's a nightmare is going over budget and being bothered by what are we going to do? It's raining and everything. I just go in the trailer and read. Let somebody knock on the door and say, we're stopping today. Great. See you tomorrow.
You're good with that.
Yeah. So I have no desire to take on angst that no one's asking me to.
And when you put that aside, what do you look for in a director then?
You want, here's what you really want. You know, I saw, before I met Nicholas, I saw Bronson, which the movie that he
discovered.
No,
you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You saw it afterwards.
No, I saw it before.
No, you didn't.
I saw the Pusher series afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, you always say you didn't want to see any of my movies before you made a movie with me.
Then I didn't. Then I'm changing it for the radio. Leave me alone.
Do you want to throw him up against the wall again?
After we leave.
Okay.
But in any case, after I met him, I saw it, and I didn't tell him. But he has real style. He's got unique style. He's a filmmaker. He's not like me. He's not like anyone else. And that's what you want, because you want, you know, you always want a movie to work and be successful. But if it's not successful, you want to go down with a stylistic ship. You know, and believe me, I worked for other people who halfway in the movie, you look in their face and they're panicked and they don't know where they're going, and that makes you feel terrible. So, Nick, you just say, okay, I'm hitching on to you, and let's keep our fingers crossed. And by the way, as I saw the movie come together with the cast, with Carey Mulligan and Christina Hendricks and Bryan Cranston, that makes you feel good because he's picking, oh, good, he picked him. So, you know.
Ron Perlman
was fantastic. And so Nicholas has his own style, and I jumped on that ship and rode along with it.
Your previous films, Nicholas Reffin, include Valhalla Rising and the Pusher Trilogy. Is there a style that you have that is over all of your films that you try to create?
No, I mean, not intently. I mean, I'm what you call a fetish filmmaker. I make films based on what I would like to see, and not always understanding it, meaning that when I start to develop, there's not so much logic, but then eventually some kind of story kicks into what I want to see. But I mean, you know, and then you just take it from there. I mean, a movie like Bronson, which takes place in a British prison system, was certainly something that didn't appeal to me as a story, but the concept was very fetish to me. So then you figure a way how to make it and so forth.
Initially, Ryan Gosling brought you the story?
Well, no, actually, it was he wanted to do... He asked if I would meet with him in L.A. to do a movie. And we had never met, but... You know, LA is all about meetings, and I was certainly, yeah, let's meet, you know. But I had a very high fever. I had gotten the flu coming into Los Angeles, so Harrison Ford had gotten me these anti-flu drugs, which were very good because they got the fever down, but it made me high as a kite.
That's when, by the way, when Harrison Ford takes meetings with young directors, he makes them take flu shots. So.
But it did something to me because I was the chair, basically.
That was to drug you into working for free.
Yeah, and so I met with Ryan, and it was all very strange because I really couldn't have a conversation. And you know, we would talk professionally, but it was hard to kind of talk about anything specifically. I mean, and then halfway through dinner, I asked him to take me home. You know, it was a bit odd because I don't drive a car, so he had to take me home.
For a movie called Drive.
It was a bit like a blind date gone terribly wrong. Like, nobody was going to get any action here, so please take me home. And on a car ride home, there was this awkward silence between us because it wasn't like something productive had come out of us, you know. And he turns on the radio, and it's REO Speedwagons. I can't fight this feeling anymore. And I'm an 80s boy, and I always love rock ballads. So, and when you're so stoned, you do crazy stuff, like turning the music really, really loud. And you start singing to the song. So I started singing to the song, and then I started to cry because I was emotionally confused. You know,
and on meds,
and high as
a kite.
And
this, of course, made Ryan feel secure.
This is the guy I've made
the right choice.
Insecure.
He dropped him off at Cedars of Lebanon.
You're the guy.
You're the guy. And so here I was crying, tears were rolling down my cheeks, but it gave me some kind of fetish of an idea how to do a movie. And I turned to Ryan for the first time, really, and I looked at him. He's a very good-looking man, and I screamed in his face because the music was so obnoxiously loud. I got it. We're going to make a movie about a man who drives around in a car at night listening to pop music because that's his emotional relief. And Ryan just stared at me, and then he said, cool, I'm in.
Thank God they didn't go golfing. It would have been a boring movie.
Would have been a whole other story.
But it was interesting because the whole
two
movie
men in the golf cart
started on some kind of, you know, emotion that we connected to. So then on, it was just, and we, you know,
we have a clip from the film. It's when Ryan Gosling first meets Albert Brooks's character, and there's a lot going on here. First of all, you get to hear a lot of the sound of the cars. I want to talk about this on the other side of it. There's a lot of silences. There's a lot of really long pauses. This is a main character, Ryan's character, who's a man of very few words.
I think it's one of the best things about the movie. It's just really, the silences are fantastic.
Let's take a listen to this short clip.
I'll think about it. Okay? But I want to meet the kid first.
That's all I ask. I want you to meet somebody. Listen, whatever you do like about the car, don't say anything. I want to drive the price down a little bit. Kid, I want you to meet Mr. Bernie Rose.
Nice to meet you.
My hands are a little dirty.
So am I.
A brief scene from Drive opens this Friday, directed by my guests, Nick Reffin, and stars Albert Brooks. Is there a Jewish mafia still around in Los Angeles? Did you do some research on any of this, Albert?
No. Oh. Well, I don't. Did you do some research? I did.
And if you met any of them, would you admit it?
Met them. They represent me. I'll give you the agency's number. I have no comment.
You're going to leave it just as that.
Not until I'm out of safely out of New York.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Let's talk about the driving sequences. There are basically three big... I mean, there's a driving scene in almost every scene, actually. Is there something new about the way you captured these driving scenes in this film?
Well, it's not like you set out to do something new. I mean, the movie is called Drive, but it's not about driving. It's about a man who has a car that drives. So, you know, in that way, it's about many different things. It's about movement. I think that, you know, of course, it has a lot of action, and you approach action with what you have. And here in this film, we didn't have a lot of money. I had very little time to do it. So you adapt to your situation. I mean, I come from always not having any money in making films, so I guess it forces you to be very creative, and then you kind of approach the various car chase scenes in their own nature. But your question about silence is very interesting, because for me, silence has always been my favorite sound, you know, because with silence you can actually create things out of, you know, rather than you're used to bombarded with sounds that has no difference. Silence is a great, it's like almost like how to orchestrate sound is through silence. So my films have generally a lot of silence, and of course Ryan not talking a whole lot was also a way to, you know, build his kind of mythological character in a way that he was a man who comes out of a past that's mysterious and enters this town and falls in love with Carey Mulligan, and yet we don't know anything about him, but his silence makes him very romantic and very pure, and then when she needs to be protected from the villains, his silence becomes deadly because it's more frightening when you don't know what's going on. And
I think there's another aspect too, and that's that, you know, I've made all my movies in Los Angeles. I was born there. I know the city almost too well. When you get somebody who doesn't know it, they present it in an interesting, I mean, it's like what Woody Allen's doing now with going to Paris and Rome, and it's just he's able to look and maybe see the four streets that you don't even think about because you live there. And Nicholas and the set designer and the cinematographer, the film is gorgeous. I have to say, it is gorgeous. It is lit beautifully. And it's a kind of Los Angeles that sort of reminds you of, you know, if Michael Mann had better equipment. Camera, I mean.
Ryan Gosling makes a connection between his character in Drive and De Niro's character in Taxi Driver, which you were in, Albert
yeah.
Brooks. Did you make that connection while you were making
it? I made it while I watched it. I didn't make it while I was acting with Ryan, but while watching it, some of the visuals, some of the way that even blood is used as almost like to paint with, reminded me of specific scenes in Taxi Driver. And of course, De Niro, you know, wasn't a real talker. So the aspect of your hero or anti-hero sort of minimizing what he says in the whole movie, that they're similar in that regard.
This is, speaking of the blood, it's rated R, and it felt like an extremely violent film to me. And it's one of those things where I'm at home and I'm watching an old horror picture. I turn the sound down and it's sort of easier. So I couldn't tell if it was the silences, if it was the anticipation, if it was the music, or indeed there is a lot of violence in this film.
Well, you know, violence is of course an interesting medium because it's very similar to pornography, you know, and in that violence works in its buildup. Not so much in its execution, because that is what reminds us of the fantasy nature of what we're seeing. But like sex, it's all about the build-up to the payoff, you know. And if there is no payoff, it becomes like really bad pornography. And then it has no any kind of sensibility to it. So I always look at it like if I was having sex, what would I like to feel? And then you take it from there.
God, do I not want to be in your room?
But it was interesting. I mean, for example, but also, you know, with violence, you also it's also the actors who are performing it. You talk to them about, you know, the whole notion of what they have to go through. And one of the great pleasures of working with Albert, and it really was. I mean, some of the best memories I have of this movie is my house with Albert Brooks, Brian Cranston, and Ron Perlman just going over the script and tearing it to pieces and rewriting scenes and coming up with ideas. I mean, those nights, Albert, will always be...
Aww.
That's like, now I knew I was in Hollywood making a movie because Aww. It was just, it was the best. And also his performance, I mean, every day when Ryan and I was like, so are we shooting Albert today? I was like, yes! It's our Albert days were like the best days because... Also, it was something unpredictability in terms of Albert's performance that I was very intrigued by.
Once again, I don't want to give too much away, but even at your most evil, there's a line in which you have to do it kindly.
Yeah.
Which blended something for me that made me believe that you were this really nasty bad guy, but it was still you because there was still a sense of compassion. and I haven't given anything away. Well, but you know what I'm talking about.
I do, but let me tell you something. This is, you know, genuinely evil people are always the most charming. I was saying to somebody that you look at Bernie Madoff, who left old women broke and unable to eat. And, you know, why do you think they gave him his money? Because he was a jerk. You know, they're charming. Serial killers get people to come in the van because they're irresistible. And whenever there's a horrible crime committed, what does everyone say who lives next door?
I never saw it coming.
No,
he seemed so nice.
You've never in the history of crime reporting seen, I knew this was going to happen.
Right.
Nobody would talk to him. So, you know, that's the thing. And what Nicholas was saying, it's what makes violence more violent is when the person not supposed to be doing it. You know, the accidental crime or the crime that comes out of such anger that you didn't know a person had it. That, to me, is scarier than the guy in Die Hard who I know from the first scene is going
to
bring the plane down. That's not a mystery.
But also
me.
In the sense of building a character is when a character has to commit something violent, that the reason he's doing it, the consequences of doing it, you know, if they work, you automatically get much more engage, you know, when Bernie Rose has to take revenge.
That's right.
It hurts him, you know, because he has to do something he doesn't want to do.
He doesn't start out like that. He doesn't wake up wanting to hurt anybody.
On the contrary.
Just wants to make his money and buy his crummy shirts.
He does produce movies.
Yeah,
he
gets his hands dirty.
The DVD rights to his movies he produced in the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, even as I look back at the, and people will talk about this, and once again, I'm not giving anything away, the elevator scene, it's all about the buildup. It's all about this is not going to go well, but you sit on that for a very long time. It is that anticipation.
Well, it's the same kind of concept. I mean, the elevator scene, of course, you know, the movie's very structured like a Grimm's fairy tales, where it's all very pure and romantic in the beginning, and then once it gets violent, it gets extremely violent and very visceral, but also there's a strong moral to it. And, of course, the elevator scene, I always call it the heart of the movie. You know, each movie has to have a heart where all the blood pumps out from to all the other scenes. And it doesn't have to be in the beginning. It can come at other places. And this particular scene was always, now I knew what the heart was. So everything else was built around that scene.
You got the Best Director Award for this film at Cannes. What was your feeling about that?
What was kind of surreal was that it was given to me by Robert De Niro, and which was odd because I was actually a bit like, I wonder what he would feel about the film, because I mean his performance in Taxi Driver is such a, you know, if you take Marlon Brando's On the Waterfront, then you go into Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver. And they are the kind of iconic performances that young male they gravitate towards, that the loner man who explodes or has moral complexes, but it always has to do with something violent within a man. It's very primal. And I thought, well, I mean, he's done this movie similar in a way. Why would he be interested in this? But he came up to me afterwards and was very, very kind and gave me a very good reason why I got it.
We only have about a minute left. Albert Brooks, you were on the Lopate show not that long ago for your novel. Were you writing that while you were doing Drive?
I had just finished. You know how long it takes to publish a book. I was doing Drive last fall, and I think the book was submitted right before the movie, but I was doing all kinds of, you know, reading drafts or misprints that they do in India.
A couple of more quick questions too before we go. Weeds, it's a great character you have.
Oh,
on the
I'm
show.
Done with that.
You're
no,
done.
No,
oh,
no,
that's
no.
What I wanted to know. There's
no, I'm never coming back.
Oh, I thought that was terrific. I'd love to see you come back in there. The new movie is called Drive. It opens this Friday. I've been speaking with actor Albert Brooks and director Nick Reffin on this new film. It opens across the city. Thank you so much for coming in today.
It was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was
Nick.